draft day. Well,
yep,
sort of.
Well, expansion draft day.
Expansion draft. It's not the movie. It's not Kevin Costner, Cleveland Browns draft day.
Actually, I quite like that movie, I must tell you. I think the NFL did a magnificent job with that movie. So
I thought it was fantastic. Now, yeah. If it hadn't been the Browns, I think I probably would have felt the same way.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I'm not a Browns fan, and I loved it.
You have to concede that the premise was a bit of a stretch.
You know, we should do when we get a quiet day, we should do a discussion about best sports movies, because...
Well, that never gets old, right?
No, and I'll tell you what. Draft Day, people can roll their eyes. I really enjoyed it. And Moneyball, obviously. Those are the two movies that if they're on,
I watch it.
Yeah, I do. So, but that's not what today's about. Today's about the Seattle Kraken.
Well, it is, but the last team to go through what the Kraken are going through now were the Vegas Golden Knights. And we all know that they did.
He fleeced everybody. He fleeced everybody.
They did the best job in the history of expansion drafts in any sport.
Right.
Any sport, any time. And I don't think anybody will duplicate what they did. Mm-hmm. And when I say they, most specifically, we refer to the now president, but then general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights. Our friend George McPhee will join us and we'll talk about what happened, how he did it, and maybe see if he's got any advice for the Kraken. We'll do that after these messages. And we're back. It's McCowan. It's Shannon. And we are joined by the president of the Vegas Golden Knights, George McPhee, who 4 years ago on this day went through the process that the Seattle Kraken are about to go through. And I must say, Mr. McPhee, that you are now the king of expansion draft preparation. The way you executed your options has become quite legendary and a blueprint for the future. But I'm not sure that the Kraken are going to be able to follow suit, because you kind of woke everybody up to what you can and can't do on this thing. Was this a plan as much, or was this a series of circumstances that you managed to take advantage of?
Well, it was part of the blueprint. We had identified clubs that had protection stress. We identified clubs that had cap stress, and they're different, obviously. And there are some clubs that had both. And we thought those were clubs that we should talk to. And we did. And of the 10 clubs, I think we made 9 basically conditional deals. And the condition is you can't become a landing spot for anybody else now. You're out of this. You got what you needed. You got your protection, but you can't make another trade. That sort of locked up the market before we got into.
Hey, George, I'm sorry, George. Can you expand on that? You handcuffed these managers a little bit by doing the deal with them.
Well, no, they got the deal that was good for them.
Right.
We did a deal. We thought we were reasonable in doing the deals that we were doing. We weren't overreaching. And then when we had what we thought would be a deal, we said, this is now a conditional deal.
Okay.
You can't do anything else. You can't, it's not right if you do a deal with us and then you make another trade and bring a guy in to your club that we may have had interest in from another club. Mm-hmm. So we didn't want that to happen, and we got in the way of that. And as I said before, we thought there'd be this mass redistribution of players before we got to expansion. It didn't happen. We were waiting for it to happen, but it effectively, what we had done was it locked up the market. And
there were
those guys couldn't tell other people as well. They couldn't tell
right.
other people.
So effectively, that's what happened to a lesser degree last Saturday and earlier in the week.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. That's a good idea. How long did it take you to come up with that one?
Well, it actually it happened when we were talking to one club, and then sort of the first club that we were talking to, and Kelly and I were talking to that GM at that time, and Kelly had mentioned, this shouldn't become a, you can't do anything else now that we have our deal. And then we said, well, we're going to do this with everybody henceforth. And so that's how we started. But we were, as an organization, we were extraordinarily well-prepared. We really worked at it. And what was really amazing about the whole process, it's an exhilarating process. It's a unique experience for managers in this league and in this life, I guess, to do something like this. But we did all this work. We had an expansion draft. We had an entry draft. And we came back to Vegas. And 2 days later, we had our development camp. We had players on this.
There are at least three names that jump out at me that were a function of what you're talking about. They were deals that were done prior to your actual drafting procedure, who turned out to be integral players in your organization. Shea Theodore, Alex Tuck, William Carlson are the three that come up. I'm going to come back to Fleury in a minute, but maybe go through the process with each of those guys as you recollect it. Start with Theodore, who has become, one of the top defensemen in the National Hockey League, but was really not much more than a prospect at the time you got him.
Yeah. Well, I remember, just so you guys know, when we started this, we split the teams up, 15 to Kelly, and I took 15.
Okay.
Because I just didn't think one guy could do it all effectively. So that's what we did. And I had Anaheim, and I talked to Bobby Murray, and he would make Theodore available if we would take Stoner's contract, because he had 1 year left, and I think he was at $3.5 million. He had been injured a lot, probably couldn't play, and that gets in the way of what you can do in a summer. Right. During the year, if the player is on LTI, you can replace the salary, but in the summer, it gets in the way.
Yeah.
And in fairness to Bobby, they had a good defense at the time, a deep defense, and he could afford to move this guy at that time. And so that's how that one went. Alex Tuck, again, that was, I think it was Kelly that had that club, but Chuck was really good. He negotiated well in that situation. And Chuck was in a jam because he had a lot of good players.
Yeah.
And you're going to lose somebody. And didn't want to lose a couple of the defensemen we were asking for. And so, he just happened to mention in the conversation he was trading Hollow to somebody for a third round pick. And I think Kelly said, well, we'd have interest in that guy. We would do that. And I think Chuck said, well, if I do that with you, do you take Tuck instead of a couple of the defensemen you're talking about? And said, yeah, we could do that. And that's how that one came about. And then
Carlson,
William Carlson, they were having trouble with the Clarkson contract.
Right.
It was getting in the way, and asked if we could take it. I think there were 3 years left on that. And so that's a big number to take. And so he said, we talked about picks, and I believe we got a first round pick to take the Clarkson contract. And, there might have been a second involved in there to take Carlson.
So when and this those types of deals, would that have happened from the time the protected list came out, or how long had you been talking to people over that period of time?
The Columbus deal happened during the expansion window. The The Minnesota deal, I think, happened a few days before we got to expansion. And again, that was one of those conditional deals. It's not, right. It's not a deal we can take to central registry because we don't know if it's happening, because if you make a trade between now and then, it's off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who was he?
And the one with Bob Murray.
And I think Bobby was a few days leading up to expansion as well. It didn't happen in the window.
Because the Fleury deal was a lot. It was well before anything, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had talked about it around the trade deadline because Jimmy was trying to do some things. And, you know, there was, you know, an understanding that we could go this way. But again, it was conditional because if you did anything without talking to us, then that deal was off.
So
I wonder what you perceived as the most valuable asset in the process. Cap space is a consideration. Terms of contracts, length of term in contracts is a big consideration. Was there one thing that specifically you valued more than anything else?
Well, in terms of trying to find players, we're trying to get the best players we could. And, you know, everything's related to everything else. And
of course,
any of the variables, the whole equation changes. So, you know, we were trying to find good players and high character people. And, you know, because it's always, you know, what's inside the jersey is what really matters. I remember one of the takeaways, you know, we met with Bob Clark and we met with Doug Risebrough to talk about their expansion experiences. And Risebrough said, don't be afraid to look for the unknown surprises. You know, that's a William Karlsson. That's an Alex Tuck. That's a Shea Theodore.
Yeah.
That's a Braden McNabb. You don't have to go for the big names. They'll be out there. But, you know, the unknown surprises. And, you know, and then the other thing he said, don't get sentimental about your players. You know, make the moves you have to make each summer to keep making your team better.
Of course.
We tried to do that. And then Bob Clark said, you know, what you've got to try to do is make Vegas a special place to play for your players. And I think Vegas would be a special place to play anyway, because it's unique and lots of neat things about it. But ownership has allowed us to really run a first-class operation here. And whatever we need, we get in terms, you know, infrastructure stuff, or if we want to go after a certain player, he's never said no.
So, with the depth of the pool of players, did you prioritize defense over forwards, or what did you what did you think was most important to deal with first?
We thought that defensemen would be more valuable than forwards. So when we added the extras, you have to take so many in each category. We took more defensemen, and we picked up four extra defensemen, and we traded them all for picks.
Right.
The expansion draft.
So the one that jumps to mind is you took Mark Mathot from Ottawa, and moved him to Dallas very quickly, very quickly.
Yes.
How long would that trade have taken to procure? Would you have said we're going to, once the list, could you have phoned somebody in Dallas? I guess Jimmy was there by then. Could you phone Jim Nill and say, hey, Jimmy, we're going to take Mark Mathot. Are you interested?
We started making those calls right after, or we had guys calling us. I can't remember if I called Jimmy or he called me.
Okay.
But that one was, you have to do them quick because you're now sort of getting into free agency. And once the market, we all know that once the market dries up, it dries up and you are not going to be able to move something. Yeah. And so we moved on. Those things happen, it feels like in 24 hours or less.
24 hours after the draft?
Within it, probably. And within, you know what? Actually, we may have, I can't recall, but I think we did it when we got back from the entry draft.
Right.
We did it just as we were heading into free agency.
Yeah.
And it really did dry up quick. I remember when I was down to the last defenseman. I was talking to David Poyle and didn't really have the money, but needed a guy. And we picked up a little bit of money to make it happen, but we got to draft it. But yeah. That's how that worked.
I'm just curious. Go ahead, Bob. No, go ahead, Bob.
If you go back to the first ever expansion draft, which was what, John, 1967?
Yep.
And the team that came out now, of course, that was all different. The six expansion teams all played in the same division. They essentially played against each other. And the St. Louis Blues emerged from that and then got run over in the Stanley Cup final. But who was their goaltender? It was Glenn Hall, right?
36 years old, I think. 36.
Yeah, but a guy who was going to the Hall of Fame, who'd played 501 or two consecutive games, and could still play. It raises the question of the value of a goaltender, especially in this process. We all know you don't win unless your goaltending is good at any time. And you did Fleury. Well, that was essentially the first deal you did, wasn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
So it raises the question, what's the value there? And is it advisable to perhaps overspend on a goaltender if one is available?
That's a rather cryptic question, Bob.
Well,
yeah, not hard to tell where you're going with that one.
Well, but Fleury, what was Fleury's salary when you got him?
5.25, I think.
You know, and at that point for a goaltender, that was up there, correct?
I think it was
top five.
No, I don't think so.
Middle of the road.
Yeah, pretty reasonable.
So economically, you weren't impacted by the dollars involved.
No, we had lots of room.
Yeah.
Well, you guys know where I was going with this sort of, and that is there is a $10.5 million salary available for a goaltender with 5 years left on it. And the question becomes, is Seattle going to bite on that? You know,
I have no idea, but I do know that when we were going through the process, it was hard to find goalies, and we were trying to get some young goalies, but because first and second year players are exempt, it was hard to find younger goalies that you could get to the minors without having to go through waivers.
Waivers, right.
There's no point in claiming a guy in expansion and then losing him on waivers, unless it was a throwaway pick, but that's not what we were trying to do with the goalies. So we had to make sure that we could get the best goalie we could. And, you don't know what – you're trying to put the best team you can on the ice.
Of course.
But if you're not getting goaltending and you're losing games, it's one thing to lose a game 2-1 or 3-2. It's another to lose 6-2. Mm-hmm. And we were, we thought we're gonna put a team on the ice. We hope it's good. But if we're trying to develop this team and everything else and develop young players that we have, we can't be losing 6-2 every night. If we're in the game and they're working all night long and, you can go somewhere with that. But if you're getting blown out every night and you don't have a chance, it's going to be a short season. And so we tried to get the best goalie we could. And with the new league rules and everything else, you want this expansion to work in this market.
Right.
We didn't know. Like, we were selling a lot of tickets, which was unbelievable what we were selling before we, had that great first year. We were selling a lot of tickets, but you don't know how quickly that's going to dwindle. And we didn't know initially whether we'd have 4,000 or 5,000 people at games. So we wanted to put a good team on the ice to make sure it worked in this market, to give a team a chance to take hold and grow roots and grow them deep and be a good franchise.
Yeah. Well, let's face it. The pool of players you had was by far the best pool in the history of the National Hockey League for an expansion team. When you consider, like when Bob talked about that 67 expansion, you were getting the 18th, 19th, and 20th best players off rosters, as opposed to the 8th, 9th, and 10th players off rosters, right?
Yes. Yeah, and and for that reason, I remember looking at the rules initially, and I was like, geez, they're not that much better, but they were better. The league did a good job. And then we were able to leverage some
things. So how many mock drafts do you think you did?
We probably did one a month.
One a month for the whole season? Like yeah. You would have started in October and said, okay, where are we?
Yeah.
And how many times did the bodies change?
Oh, with every draft. And initially, it helps you get facile with the rules.
Right.
Because after each run through in the mock draft, we had questions for the league. I mean, how are you interpreting this rule? How are you interpreting this? And on some of them, Bill Daly had an answer right away. And he said, geez, I'm not sure. We're going to have to research that one a little bit. So we're learning, how to work with the formula that the league provided. We're trying to figure out the rules. And our scouts are working together. It's a new group of scouts. And so they're evaluating these players. Our scouts are developing better chemistry throughout the year. They're getting better reads on players. Some players are having a good year. Some players are fading. So that it changed from month to month.
It's important to understand the scouting process too, because you did it for a full year. But as a general rule, when you scout, you're scouting for tendencies in a general sense, leading up to a game if you're about to play some team. But in this case, you are evaluating individual talent or attempting to do so. But part of that process is trying to figure out which of those guys you should be focusing on who are possibly going to be in this draft. Did it get easier as the season progressed to make that assessment? Or was it still kind of a puzzlement?
No, it got easier. I was really, really, really impressed with the group of scouts that we hired, and they were really good, and they knew these players as we got closer to the draft, like the back of their hand. Mm-hmm. And that process got the whole process got easier as we moved along.
As a leader, how did you build consensus, George?
Well, I've always had, I guess, a real participative management style. Like when we're meeting now, for example, for the entry draft or the expansion draft or for free agency, we like having everyone in the room and create an environment where everybody feels comfortable speaking up. And everybody's respectful and everything else. We don't argue over anything. And you keep going over things, and you get to a point where, okay, this looks like the move we should make here. Hmm. And then I've really enjoyed this group of people we work with, and that's how we operate. Nobody gets too bent out of shape about anything. And we try to enjoy these jobs.
When the list was presented to you, were there names on there that absolutely shocked you, surprised you?
No.
You had it pretty much figured out?
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting because we got the list and we thought that right away the phones would be ringing off the hook, and it was really quiet for 2 hours because everybody else was examining the list.
Right.
All the other teams. And then, it was interesting because there was a bit of hesitation when we started about, when we went through all the lists, because whenever we did a mock draft, we say, okay, well, let's do this one. We'll just do it alphabetically, or let's do this one backwards. Let's start with, Washington or Winnipeg, Vancouver first, and then work up to the B's and the A's, and just, and so we were about to start this one. I said, geez, how do we start this one?
Hmm.
No, who do we pick? Who do we pick first? But it was pretty much laid out. And we had all kinds of screens and everything else. It was amazing how it was set up. And the one thing we didn't think about was having just some more whiteboards to take notes on some other things. But it was a really intense process. And it was hard, and this is why I wanted to split the teams up between Kelly and I, because you know, he's working the phones and I'm working the phones and you're having a conversation with a GM. And again, when you walk back in the room to explain what's on the table between the two teams and how it might have changed from the last conversation, you've had four or five calls from other GMs in that time.
Right.
So you walk in, you try to explain everything. And again, if the variables are moving around, everything's moving around. And then you've got to get back and call these guys. And it is, the first day and a half was hard. And I was worried on the, about 11 o'clock on Monday morning that, geez, are we going to get through this? Because it's intense. And I don't feel like we're getting enough traction yet. But then later in the day, it's 4 o'clock. I said, okay, it's starting to kick. It's all kicking in now. And then it flowed.
Not to pick on teams, but one of the factors is the fact you have to take a player from every team. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, that might influence who you take from another team.
Exactly.
And how did you arbitrate that? Because do you feel in the end, did you leave somebody off the roster that you thought you should have, but you'd filled that void with another player from another team?
No, I think that there was maybe one club, and I don't want to mention names because I don't want to insult players. There was one club that could have picked another player that might have been better for us. But other than that, I thought we nailed it.
Yeah. Well, you obviously did. Yeah. You went to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, you know, when you walk out of an entry draft I know what that feels like when you feel like you nailed it. You know, never been through an expansion draft on this side of it. And when it was over, when we clicked that button for the biggest NHL transaction in history to send all the names in, felt like we really did a good job.
Well, you clearly did, and your team performed that way. But as you have said, I mean, it would be impossible on that day to have aspirations of success such as that team achieved. Mm-hmm. It would be an impossibility, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
too impossible. Yeah.
So I'm going to guess at some point your owner said to you, well, how good do you think this team might be? I mean, he's a relative neophyte in the business and enthusiastic for sure. And a lot more knowledgeable now, I'm sure, than he was on that day. But I'm sure at some point he came to you, George, and said, all right, you did a good job, I think. How good could this team be? What would your answer have been?
Well, I didn't know early on. I thought we looked really good early on. Played the first game in Dallas. They completely outplayed us, and Fleury played well, and we won in overtime. And then we went to Arizona and won in overtime. And then we came home, and, you know what happened on our home opener.
Right.
And we were playing really, really well. But it wasn't until December when we, over a two-week period, we played several of the best teams in the league, and we won most of those games. And I think we all thought then that, you know, we can be a playoff team. And, I think we can go to the Stanley Cup, but that we could be, that we'd be a playoff team and we could be pretty good.
As I recall, that credibility thing, that December thing, was an East Coast swing. And you guys came east and made a huge impact, even I think won 5 of 6 games going across the country. And people, and you created a ton more, even though people were aware of you because of it was Vegas, and you did a great job with your jerseys and everything that was going on and how you honored the fallen people from the Vegas massacre. But when you came east and got that Eastern press saying, holy smokes, this Vegas team is really good, that's when the whole league turned and said, you know what? You're right. You are that good.
Well, it was, you don't know when the other shoe is going to drop. You know, I remember watching a team when I was working in Washington, and they were one of the top teams in the league in January, and they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so you don't know, but got your fingers crossed, and it looks like a good team. Let's hope they keep playing well.
Hey, how many times would you have talked to Ronnie Francis through this process? Would he have ever phoned to just say, hey, your thought process? Since you aren't involved in the actual expansion draft, was there any dialogue?
No, we've talked a couple times about a couple things, but it really wasn't about expansion.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, I talked to Todd Lightwicky came in, you know, last year, it feels like a year and a half ago now, to have lunch and just say, you know, tell me some things, like what kind of advice. And he was fantastic. And that's, I think they're going to be in great shape because he's there. But if Ronnie and I had talked and asked for any advice, I would have said, make it clear when you get into the negotiating window, to tell clubs, we don't have a lot of time. We're on the clock. We don't have a lot of time. We're going to need every minute of this process. So put your cards on the table. Don't fool around.
Yeah.
What do you want to do? And that would save a lot of time, because there are a number of calls where you're going back and forth and back and forth and can't keep doing this.
You know? We got to take a quick break. We're going to come back and chat a little bit more with George McPhee prior to the expansion draft by the Seattle Kraken. We'll do that after these messages. McCowan, Shannon, and the president of the Vegas Golden Knights, George McPhee, is with us. I don't know how well you can answer this question, but if anybody can, you can. How different do you think this draft is going to be from the one 4 years ago that you were involved in?
I think there are a lot of managers who are going to say, "Just we're not doing deals, just make your pick." I think that may have been the lesson learned from 4 years ago. It's unfortunate that some guys really got beat up by the media on what transpired. But at the time, they were trying to do a reasonable deal. We were trying to do a reasonable deal, and it worked out for us.
Mm-hmm.
So in fairness to those GMs, you know, did we expect William Karlsson to come in and get 40 goals? No.
No, of course not.
But could he be a good 200-foot center? First over the boards, 5-on-5, first over the boards, PK, power play, you know, and get you 25 goals? Yeah, we thought he might be that. So I think that, you know, a lot of GMs, I wouldn't be surprised if we hear after this that a lot of guys just say, just make your pick. This is, you know, we're going to lose one guy and that's it. Mm. I think the pandemic will probably really help Seattle in that some teams are choking on some big contracts that that the performance isn't there right now, and some guys would like to get out of jail.
Well, you know, I mean, we keep coming back to the price situation, but there are other players out there with big contracts that might be enticing. And yet you still, even though Seattle says they can spend to the cap, they're going to have to be careful. I guess as you did too. And what was your salary structure going into year one? Do you remember how far from the max you were?
I don't, but we had lots of room.
Yeah.
We couldn't, yeah. And within a year or so, we were at the cap. But the team was better and as a result. But, yeah, it's and I think this is where the unknown surprises come in. Like, there are some good players out there. They've got good names. They've got big contracts. You know, work a little harder and try to find a guy that nobody knows a whole lot about right now, but could be a real good player for the next 4 or 5 years for you or longer. Because if you get a guy with a big contract and he underperforms, now you're just in trouble. It gets in the way of your progress.
You know, yesterday, Alex Killorn came out publicly and said, he's available in the draft. He says, I don't want to leave Tampa. I don't want to be picked by Seattle. Did you run into any of that from any of the players available to you that said, listen, I appreciate you? Or did you get messages from agents asking you, please don't pick my guy in order to avoid any controversy?
I don't think so. Not that I recall. And in fact, it was really kind of neat how upbeat a lot of the players were. And Belmar, you know, when it was interesting because we made all the picks, we sent it into Central Registry that morning. The show was that night at whatever time it was, maybe 5 o'clock here in Vegas. We're trying to keep the whole thing a secret, but we did have to reach out to the players that we claimed.
Sure.
A lot of people thought that the draft that night at 5 o'clock was live. But it wasn't, obviously, in terms of the selection process. But Belmar, of all people, said, I am honored to be claimed by the Vegas Golden Knights and look forward to being there.
Wow.
And it was, a lot of guys were, you know, pretty upbeat about it. I don't, you know, recall having a single player really that was disappointed. Surprised, yeah, some might have been, but not disappointed.
Well, go ahead,
please. Sorry, it was just in trying to, you know, we thought because we were an expansion team, we would have lots of opportunities. When we were trying to recruit players that were junior players that hadn't been drafted or college free agents, we thought that this would be the place that they would all want to come to. And it was sort of the opposite. It was, we had a lot of guys that didn't want to go to an expansion team. A lot of those young players didn't want to go on the expansion team. And then when we got, you know, when we were playing well, you know, there were more that were interested in coming here.
Well, you know, I was about to say,
players have pride. They don't.
Yeah.
It's more about pride sometimes than the opportunity, and that someone's got to explain it the right way to them that, you know, it's about opportunity.
Well, we've had more than a few conversations about the city, my having lived there for a number of years, and you have clearly fallen in love with the city. And I'm guessing most of your players have done the same.
Absolutely.
To discover that it is not what people, the 40 million or so people who go there for four nights of debauchery, it is not, that's not what this city is about. It's a part of it, yes, but it is not what it's about.
Yeah, it's not what the locals do. A lot of locals work there, but
yeah,
I think I explained once before, most of the people that go to all the entertainment on the strip are tourists. You know, 95% would be tourists. The hockey team's the opposite.
Yep.
You know, it's, I think we were, a couple of years ago, we were 94% local and 6% people coming into town, and tourists and whatever. And we sold tickets to small businesses, families, and so on. And so it is a, it's a fantastic place to live. You know, last night we all went over right next door to where our facility is to watch the minor league baseball team play a game, and in this beautiful new stadium, and just a beautiful, you know what the Vegas nights are like.
Sure.
Know? Like they're just, especially in the winter, but summer, so, you know, a little warm, but
yeah.
Well, last night was actually nice. It was, I think it was 93.
Oh, but did you have you had a sweater on then?
Yeah, 93 here is easy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before we finish talking, we can talk about the weather all the time. And you know what? That's all old guys do, is talk about the weather, I think. So, George, the other date that's coming up is 28th, and that's free agency. And you mentioned the cap and the pandemic and COVID, and how do you think it's going to play out early after the 28th? Do you think there's going to be that frenzy that we usually see?
Yeah.
You do, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just, if you you can't be the 10th team that reaches out to a player, you know, you can't wait a couple of days to reach out to a player. And so people are going to make their calls and try to make decisions quick. And it's a dangerous time of the year. You know, you can talk about it. You know, they're free players, so you just have to pay them a little bit more. But they often end up don't being free player. They're not free players because you end up having to trade them later in their career when, you know, the performance has dropped and they're in decline, and you have to give up a draft pick or two to move them out. So right. You got to be careful.
Every one of those players that you might have interest in has now played in Las Vegas, even though you haven't played there for a year and a half, because of the nature of who those players are. Do you sell the city? Do you sell the team? Because you can sell both. You had a great team for 4 years, a competitive team for 4 years. I know you're disappointed in this past season and your result, but what do you sell? What do you talk to a player about? Or is it really all about money and not the rest of it?
Don't mention the taxes, because the taxes will sell you.
Yeah. You know, I've said a number of times, you get a free house when you live here because the money you save in your state taxes just pays your mortgage. So
it's not untrue.
Yeah. Bob, you know, there's lots to sell here. And I think when you've got both, you know, I think it's a very good organization. It's a good team and a great place. And there's no state tax. But you go beyond that. You know, the youth hockey programs that we have, you know, you're a guy that's got two or three kids and your daughter or your son wants to play hockey. We've got lots going on here. Hmm. And it's easy to, you know, you're 5 minutes away from this rink. Most of the players live within 5-6 minutes of the rink. It's that easy. And well, you know, someone.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was there.
Yeah. So, and obviously for the guys, they can have a good practice, go play a game of golf and get ready for the game tomorrow night. You know, it's just, you know, the good schools, parks, churches, great restaurants. I mean, a lot of the people that have restaurants down on the strip have great restaurants out here.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. So, you know, those of us that have been here for a while, it feels like a small town. It feels like you live in this small community. And we rarely go to the strip. You know, if there's a, you know, A-list entertainment, you want like a great band or a big UFC fight or something someone wants to see, it's easy to get there and do. And we have access. We have access to tickets and everything else. But most of the time we're out here and doing what families do.
One last hockey question I hate to do. Yeah. Are you going to start the year with Fleury and Leonard in goal? You think?
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it was a great tandem this year and would very well be a great tandem again next year. Fleury won the Vezina, they won the Jennings Trophy. But the cap sort of dictates a lot, and we'll see what happens.
It's a blessing that you didn't have to put on a protected list.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. One of the advantages of being in Vegas is you won't have to worry about what happens later today with the Kraken, at least specifically as far as your team is concerned. But then a whole bunch of stuff is going to happen over the next few days, so we know you'll be very busy. And yeah, we're most appreciative of you taking time for us.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we are exempt from the draft. And, you know, but for the pressure of the expansion draft for most teams, we probably wouldn't have been able to make the deals that we made.
Right.
Because Cody Glass was exempt and no one wasn't. And, you know, a kid like Howden, they wouldn't have, you know, but for the pressure of, you know, of losing him for nothing, they get a fourth round pick from us. We get a good young player. And so I'm glad we are exempt. And the $21 million that we miss out on.
That's Mr. Foley's problem.
Exactly. Not our money.
He'll sell a couple more bottles of wine. He'll be fine.
He's selling enough of those. That's for sure.
How's your hip, by the way? I haven't talked to you for
really
a while.
Good. Really
Are you
good.
Better? 100% now?
It's as good as it's going to be, and I can run, I can ride a bike, I can play tennis. So, yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I played couple of matches with my daughter out in Martha's Vineyard last week, and it felt really good.
Well, good. Continued good health, because I know you struggled with it for a little while there. And
yeah, it took about a year and a half to get to where I wasn't hesitating. And yeah, no, it's lucky that way. Bob, you know how that stuff goes.
Well, hopefully the world is changing rapidly, although I know that COVID rates are up again in the United States. We're down here, and the borders may be reopening shortly.
August the 9th.
Well, at least one way.
Well, you can go visit them, but we may not let you back in, Bob.
Thank you very much. I may not want to come back. How about that? George, it's always our pleasure. We thank you very much for your time, and we wish you continued success and good health. And hopefully we'll have a chance to break some bread pretty soon.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you guys in person in Toronto. That would be fantastic.
Well, you are always welcome here. George McPhee, the president of the Vegas Golden Knights, will be back after these. McCown and Shannon back. And as I always say, we always thank the guest at this point. And yeah. But there's nobody I like in the sport of hockey more than George McPhee.
And nobody more accommodating with us, at least for us. We've lucked out. There's a few people in the hockey world that love coming on and love talking and aren't afraid to answer some of the tough questions that we ask. And that's kind of cool. Between he and Lou, two great guys, and there's a few others like Paul Maurice that always love coming on.
Well, I think the list is longer than you imply.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, because there's guys, you know, the owner in Carolina was a great guest. The coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, Cooper was very accommodating. Maurice has been more than accommodating. The owner of the Ottawa Senators will come on anytime we ask.
We're getting Ron Francis soon too, Bob. Just so you know, we are going to get Ron Francis soon. So.
Well, that will be good because we'll have a chance to digest what he does and you can give him the your report card on how he did.
Actually, I had a quick text conversation with him yesterday, and I said, "How you doing?" He says, "I'm having a blast." So he's having fun going through this process with his assistant general manager Jason Botterill and Ricky Olczyk and his scouting staff. So they're having a good time picking their 30 players.
Well, we're going to find out late today. What time do we get the information? Is it?
It's 8 o'clock Eastern time, Wednesday night. They get picked. The team has already told the league and the Players Association who they want.
Right.
And the biggest challenge now is to keep it a secret all day.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, honestly, I was not even aware of that. I probably should have been until McPhee brought it up and made mention of the fact that, you know, the show is a show. The decisions have already been made, and everybody's aware, except they're supposed to keep it.
So if we see some tweets at 4 o'clock today that Carey Price is at Toronto Airport on his way to Seattle, then you know something's up.
I thought he spends most of his offseason on the West Coast.
He's usually in the Okanagan Valley, but he's, of course, with his medical issues, there was a chance he might have been in New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So,
well, I don't think he's going to fly from New York to Seattle via Toronto, but you never know. We'll keep our eyes open.
Well,
if you're going to the airport to walk around, John.
You can't go in. You still can't go in, Bob.
Well, if you have a Carey Price sighting anywhere, in a cab, a limo.
Tweet us.
Yeah, let us know. we'll come back with another guest tomorrow, or perhaps more than one.
No, we're actually going to have a couple of hockey guys come on and break down the draft for you. I know you'll love that. Eric Dehatchek and Billy Jaffe are coming on.
Well, those are good guys to do it.
Yep.
I don't question that. I just don't know how accurate you can be in assessing this. Because if you look, I mean, I don't care what you say. And you know, I love McPhee, but I think we all thought he did a good job, but we had no clue that team was going to be that good.
No, you know what they did is they created not the gold standard, but they created the golden standard.
Oh, that's very good. I mean,
thank you very much.
Golden Knights reference. but it was more of a platinum standard, I think.
Okay.
But it's way, way, way above gold. In any event, relax, take it easy. We'll see you next time if the crick don't rise. For Shannon McCowan, goodbye, everybody.